It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
Coming up, a look at the 45th anniversary of Sesame Street and how it's changed with the times to meet the needs of kids from different backgrounds.
First, we're getting a preview of a new series from the Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team called Under the Influence. The series takes a hard look at the alcohol culture in Wisconsin. Pieces will be running all week in Gannett papers.
Shireen Seward is with us now to talk about Wisconsin's alcohol culture. She's an investigative reporter for Gannett in Wisconsin, and she's the author of many of the pieces in this series. Shireen, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, a lot of the focus in the series is on drunk driving. And a big question here in Wisconsin is, why do we have such a drunk driving problem? What kind of answers did you hear to that question?
Well, I certainly don't think there are any easy answers to that question, but Wisconsin is unique in a number of ways. The series really took a look at Wisconsin and compared it to other states in the Midwest and found some interesting things. We are the only state in the nation where first-time OWI offenses are not a crime. It's a traffic ticket here. Everywhere else, it's at least a misdemeanor. And the penalty structure here for OWI offenses, repeat offenses, is much different than in neighboring states. Iowa, for example, treats most third offenses as felonies. Illinois and Michigan, same thing. Here it's not a felony until the fifth offense. And here, even the most egregious offenders, we're talking about people with 12, 13, 14 offenses, can get their license back after 3 years. That's also unique to Wisconsin.
And there's been a lot of talk about the culture of drinking and driving in Wisconsin. Are we hearing that maybe this that law enforcement angle of it, the lighter penalties, is sending a message to Wisconsinites that this isn't a big thing?
Perhaps. And there does seem to be a resistance to changing the policies. There will be a piece coming up Thursday with assistance from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism in Madison. They put together a piece about legislative issues that have come before our state lawmakers that have not passed. They've not even come up for a vote in many cases because there is that resistance. And drinking and driving is so ingrained in Wisconsin's culture. We really celebrate our drinking heritage here. And you know, a first-time offense carries surprisingly little stigma compared to other offenses, like shoplifting, for example. It's very unique.
And what's driving the resistance to changes in the law? There's talk about different lobbies, including the Tavern League. Do they seem like a big player when these laws come up to be passed?
You know, I can't speak for the Tavern League, but I can say that there's always been a lot of debate about changing the rules. Sobriety checkpoints, if we can take that for example, mm-hmm. These are commonly used in other states, including Illinois. They're illegal here, and they're quite controversial, not just with lawmakers, but with people, the people here. Many people believe that sobriety checkpoints could violate their rights, they send the wrong message, and they're very expensive. The Tavern League, I know, does not support sobriety checkpoints. Rather, they would rather see more roving patrols. They think they're more effective. But yet, sobriety checkpoints have been very effective in the states that use them, according to national transportation safety figures. So it's really hard to know what it's going to take to make sure that people are getting the message and that the culture changes here.
Now, you mentioned a Neenah police chief who put some kind of voluntary sobriety checkpoint in an agenda, didn't do it. Mm-hmm. What kind of reaction did he get even to floating that idea?
Swift and severe. The backlash was almost immediate. People were very upset, not just in Wisconsin. There were bloggers talking about it all over the country, and obviously it did not go through. But Kevin Wilkinson is the police chief that you're talking about, and he's going to be one of the people that will be with us on Thursday night for a community discussion to talk about some of these possible solutions to the problem of repeat drunken driving in Wisconsin. And one of the things that I know that we'll be talking about is whether sobriety checkpoints are a good idea for Wisconsin or not.
What other kind of topics are you going to tackle at this panel?
The panel will We have a judge, a treatment specialist, a psychology professor. We have the head of the Brown County OWI Task Force. We have a victim of a crash. And we have a repeat offender among the list of panelists. They're going to take questions from the community. And we'll also be talking about some maybe different ideas. One of the things that we're going to be talking about is a gentleman by the name of John Schaus, who told his story to us. He's an 8-time offender who's managed to stay sober now. He's a success story, and his story will be coming up later in the week. He is on the panel, and he wants to propose something as simple as graphic images that are placed in a brochure and put in everybody's driver's license application forms or registration forms. He just has, you know, some very unique ideas. That'll be one of several things that we'll be talking about. And perhaps the lack of treatment programs for folks to take advantage of, as well as public transportation. It'll really run the gamut.
You also profile a 12-time OWI offender who's not a success story, and you talk to people on the prosecution side. A general trend seems to be the people who are offending again and again don't really see themselves as committing a crime or doing anything wrong that merits punishment.
That certainly was the case with our 12-time offender. He was a Manitowoc man who was halfway through a 7-year prison term for his 12th offense, and he is one of the lucky ones. He didn't kill anyone. He didn't hurt anyone physically, but he really has a hard time seeing drinking and driving as a crime. He grew up with it, as many people in Wisconsin did. You know, he and his family went camping. They did a lot of things as a family, and drinking was involved a lot. And he just grew up thinking, well, my dad did it. My family does it. It must be okay if I'm not hurting anybody. And so the question is, how do you reach these people then? How do you make sure they get the message? And if they don't, how do you keep them off the road?
And it was very easy, he told you, to keep getting access to cars even after, you know, 5, 8, 10 offenses.
Yes, and you know, and that's another thing too. He could still register a vehicle in Wisconsin because an OWI offense is not tied to registration for a number of reasons. But yes, it was easy for him to gain access to a vehicle. So it's hard to know if you put these restrictions on these people, will they make a difference? Will they matter? Or will they just find another way around it?
And transportation is another issue that comes up. You at least touch on it in your piece. People have no other way to get from a place they've been drinking to get home at night. Is this something that people are talking about, maybe at your panel coming up on Thursday?
It is. It is a situation that many people face. In other countries, in very urban areas, public transportation is more readily available, and people can actually go out for the evening without even having to take a car. I had a caller today who talked to me about in Scotland, for example, is very, very different. The attitudes are very different. Because they have that public transportation, fewer people are tempted to make those wrong choices. And here in Wausau, where I'm located, bus service ends pretty early. So those are things that matter to people. And our 8-time offender, who will be on the panel, specifically has decided that he will not get a driver's license again, even though he can. He's decided he doesn't want to take the chance that he's going to have that 2,000-pound bullet in his driveway if something happens. So he said to me that living in a place where there's good public transportation makes a huge amount of difference to him and to many other people.
You've talked to people for this series on all sides of this drinking and driving issue. Have you gotten a sense that people feel like, hey, we're finally hitting a point where we're going to make some progress on this and start moving the needle?
I think so. I think that attitudes are changing about drinking and driving. Certainly, there have been changes in legislation that have been successful. A couple of years ago, some significant changes in the law really toughened things up. And people are starting to hear it. They're starting to hear that message. but not everybody is. So it's going to take some work. We certainly have a lot of work to do, but I do think that these kinds of discussions can make a difference.
Shireen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Shireen Seiwert. She's an investigative reporter for the Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team, with us to talk about the upcoming series, Under the Influence.